guards, no masters, only helpful advice.
It's Red Dead Redemption with Auckland Union Representative Justine Sachs.
Hata maria, Justine, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, yeah. Kind of, I've landed on my feet, I think.
You're doing great.
Well, thanks.
Ready to talk about rights. We've got some questions for you this morning. The first one, it comes up quite a lot, and it is, how big does a company need to be for workers to form a union?
So that's a really good question. The answer is that there's no real size barrier to forming a union. It potentially could be in terms of, it could potentially be a barrier in terms of getting a collective agreement. So that's like, you know, like what it says on the paper, basically a contract that covers you all. But you can all join the union and kind of have a delegate, which is the sort of structure, right, representative structure, and still have that protection from the union. So there's some barriers with collective agreements. So I would say that you need to have a medium-sized workplace possibly to get a collective agreement.
Right. What does medium size mean?
Well, around 30 to 40, I would say. But depending as well if you have a franchise. So, you know, like if you work at a franchise and there's different franchises around the country, that shouldn't, you know, the idea would be to get a collective agreement for everybody because you're doing the same type of work.
Right.
So don't kind of limit yourself. I mean, that's the other thing I would say. But, I mean, this is all contextual. I would actually talk. What I would do is I would become a union member and have a chat with the union about this because you never know, and there's not really any barriers. It's just, you know, obviously the union has limited resources, and a small workplace honestly probably wouldn't be a priority for a collective agreement. But have a chat with them regardless. I think it's a good idea.
Right. Mm. Oh, yeah, that's really good to know.
Also, just for the listeners, if you want to text in and you have a question for Justine about workers' rights, 5395 for the rest of the segment, but you can also do it throughout the week as well. We've just had a text come through. Do you want to...
Yeah, okay. So for people with ADHD or dyslexia, which could have an effect on productivity, what happens if they have to work longer than their co-workers to get tasks finished? Is it just a too bad deal with it situation, or are there structures in place to support them?
So, yeah, that really depends on the workplace, to be honest. And unfortunately, in too many workplaces, the answer is too bad deal with it. Which really says something about the way that we treat, you know, disabilities in our society and the way we don't support people who have, you know, I have ADHD.
Right.
You know, like, but there are support. So in large workplaces, you might have an occupational health. Mm-hmm. And I think occupational health would be a good start to see what kind of support the workplace might be able to provide. If your workplace is an equal opportunities employer, and you can find that, you know, hopefully find that in their policy. So what that means is that they, you know, seek to sort of ensure that people from marginalized or disadvantaged groups are able, you know, have some kind of ability and are able to get jobs there. So that's really important, right? It's kind of like an affirmative action kind of policy. You might be able to sort of say, hey, you're an equal opportunities employer and I do have ADHD and dyslexia and I want to know what you're going to do to support me. I would really recommend looking at WorkBridge, which is an accessibility sort of foundation that helps people with learning difficulties and developmental disorders find work, and they would have a lot of resources around this, and just some advice as well. I think that they're a good place to start.
Right.
And then there's also SPLED NZ, which that's SPELD, and so they're specifically around dyslexia, but they have some advice and some services as well for adults to help you know, adults with dyslexia do whatever work that they need to do and to give them support. And I wonder if you could ask your workplace if they would be able to, you know, give you some resources to do that. So that's something I might look into if I were in that situation. So to answer your question, a lot of workplaces, it's too bad you know, sort of deal with that situation, and that's really not good enough. But if your workplace is an equal opportunities employer, and if your workplace does have occupational health, I would definitely explore those avenues. Obviously, with your union to support you, as always.
Yeah, that helps.
And look into WorkBridge and Split. Some of the resources there, I think, would be helpful.
Right. Yeah, that's great that those are available. So that's workbridge.co.nz, and then there's spelled S-P-E-L-D.
S-P-E-L-D.org.nz.
Yeah, excellent.
This person says, me and a couple of co-workers complained about another co-worker's casual sexism, but basically got told to ignore it because he's good at his job and customers love him. Working with him leaves us all feeling like shit. What can we do?
So that's really disappointing. Your employer has the obligation to make sure that you feel safe and comfortable at work, and to just be dismissed when you're raising a real concern about a coworker and just told to ignore it is not on. So firstly, you know, just want to recognize that employer is really on the wrong side here.
Yeah.
Know that what you can do, that's a tough one, because you've raised it through the right channels, right? You've gone to management, I'm assuming, and said, hey, this is a problem. And they basically said, too bad. You know, he's good at his job. One, I just want to say it's really good that you raised it with your coworkers. It's really good to raise issues collectively. And I mean, if you're a casual, if you were all casuals, what I would say is I would actually kind of escalate a little bit and say, well, actually, please talk to him, or we're going to refuse shifts on those days, or we want to change our hours. That's a little bit of a risky move, but it kind of puts a little bit of pressure. The other thing I might do before I did that, so maybe that's a little bit risky, is I would say, well, actually, I would come up with what you guys want to happen. So what conversation do you want to be had with him? And I would actually offer that outright, like say, actually, no, that's not really good enough, and you management need to have a conversation with him, and this is what we think needs to happen at that conversation, and kind of lay that out as something that, you know, a way forward. Because often asking for something is, and giving management a way to progress an issue can help in terms of they know you're serious as well. I don't know if that makes sense. I think this is, you know, a commonplace issue. It's really difficult to deal with, and it's also really disappointing, obviously, when management won't take action. I would say also, you know, this is a reason that unions can be really helpful, because, you know, your union rep, your delegate, can be someone who can raise this at a higher level, and also put a little bit of pressure on the employer. So,
yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that gives, I think, a lot of good starting points. I've got another message here. Someone's asking, this is a great question. My contract says I'm not allowed to discuss pay rates with other co-workers. Is this all good? Feels a bit weird, as I've not had it in other contracts.
So you've not had it in other contracts. And I just have to be honest, it's because it's not really a great thing to put in a contract.
Yeah.
And it says something about the employer. So in the employment law, you are allowed to discuss your wages and your pay rates with your co-workers. But if you sign a contract to say that you won't, then you're not, because you can put anything in a contract. I mean, you can put in a contract you have to wear blue every day. If you sign it, that's in the contract, and you have to wear blue every day. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if you sign a contract and they were like, you have to wear blue every day, you might be able to take that to court and say, this guy's making me wear blue every day.
This is an example.
This is an example.
Living in a blue world,
yeah. Yeah, living in a blue world. I'm blue. To be honest, it's not a sign of a great employer when they don't want there to be transparency around pay rates. You know, transparency around pay rates is really important for equity reasons. We know that women, people of color, et cetera, on the whole, just tend to sometimes, you know, be offered lower wage rates, or there's pay equity issues and stuff like that. So not being able to discuss pay is really serious, and I think that really doesn't reflect well on the employer. Listen, if I had this in my contract, I would renegotiate that. I would ask to discuss that get together with my coworkers and approach management and say, actually, we would like to renegotiate that, because we think transparency is really important from an equity standpoint, and also just being able to, you know, ensure that same work, same pay, right? It's a really important principle. But actually, just some advice for everybody listening, do not sign a contract that says that. Have that conversation about that, because as this person said, it's not been in other contracts. Why is the boss putting it into the contract? There's only one reason, right? It's because there might be disparities, and I just find that really unfair. So yeah.
It can be a little scary with a new job and you get a contract and you just want to sign it and send it off, but
absolutely. But it is important to have those conversations, and if I totally recognize that, and that's why it's probably better to raise it collectively right after you've signed. After you're working there, the other thing I would say is if you have a collective agreement with if you own a unionized workplace, everybody knows what everybody's making because it's a collective agreement. Everybody knows, and that's really helpful for equity and transparency. So it's interesting when an employer employer where they do the opposite, and there's a purpose for that, obviously to hide inequities.
Well, thank you very much, Justine, for your time today. And also for everyone listening, if you do have a question for Justine, you can text into 5395 throughout the week and I compile them. So it doesn't have to be straight away. If something comes into mind, just let me know. But yeah, cool. Thank you very much, Justine.
Thanks.
No worries.
Lovely to meet you, Justine.
Bye.
Take that, the man.
Red Dead Redemption with Auckland Union representative Justine Sachs.
Here's a